Welcome, everyone, to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and this is episode 70, Getting Into Classrooms When You Can't Get Into Classrooms. I think the situation has probably occurred to us. You know, the scenario we're going to be operating under this year has been clear to all of us for a while, that we're probably going to have a pretty difficult time physically getting into classrooms this year. And if you have been following the model that I share in my book, Now We're Talking 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership, you may have been wondering, you know, how can I continue to get into three classrooms a day? How can I continue to be a presence in classrooms, either when nobody is physically in classrooms, or maybe just teachers are physically in classrooms and students are home, maybe you have a hybrid model, or maybe students are in classrooms, but you are planning to stay out of classrooms just to avoid complicating things and spreading things around. How can we be instructional leaders this school year if we can't physically get into classrooms? This is a question that is on my mind, and I'm sure it's been on your mind, along with a million other things. So today, I wanted to address this question directly. And our central question for today is, how can we practice evidence-driven instructional leadership when we can't physically get into classrooms? By the way, if you're tuning in live, leave a comment. Let me know that you are here. Thanks very much for joining. We try to do this show live on social media sometimes, and then we upload the recording and the podcast to our members area for members of the Instructional Leadership Association. And every month we follow something of a roadmap. You can actually download this roadmap at principalcenter.com/roadmap. We call it the Evidence-Driven Instructional Leadership Roadmap. And it is a rubric that has kind of six phases or six stages that you can use to figure out your greatest opportunities for moving to the next level as an instructional leadership. So if you go to principalcenter.com, you'll see that. You'll also see our instructional leadership self-assessment, which will ask you some questions that will help you choose where to focus on that roadmap. So you can go right to the key issues that are going to make the biggest difference for you right away as an instructional leader. And every week here on the show, we focus on a different aspect of that roadmap. And this month, we are focused on the second stage, which we call walkthroughs, get into classrooms. And again, it is going to be a rather strange year as far as getting into classrooms. It's going to be difficult to physically get into classrooms for several reasons. So let's very quickly talk about what those reasons are. And then I'm going to share with you more than half a dozen alternatives to physically getting into classrooms and still exercising evidence-based instructional leadership. So why is it difficult to get into classrooms? Well, of course, you have these reasons on your mind, no doubt. There are probably some sort of contact tracing protocols. Maybe you have pods for your students. Leave a comment and let me know if you would. You know, there's going to be an effort in virtually every school this year to kind of keep people from interacting with more people than they need to, right? Whether that's a self-contained elementary classroom or whether that's secondary students who come in shifts or things like that. And of course, we don't want to be, you know, the vector. We don't want to ruin that kind of isolation between groups that's been created. Having said that, I think it is probably possible to get into classrooms safely, you know, wearing a mask, using hand sanitizer, things like that, not getting too close to students. So, you know, I'm definitely not saying you cannot get into classrooms in person. You know, if in-person classes are taking place, you know, you just want to be mindful of the safety protocols that are there. And personally, I would try to be more of a fly on the wall than usual and not, you know, get up close to students and sit at their desks and talk with them face-to-face, knee-to-knee, you know, like we typically do. I would be a little bit more distant just for everyone's comfort and safety. But even that is likely to be the exception rather than the rule this year. We are likely to see a lot of online-only instruction, you know, almost everybody at home or maybe teachers in their classrooms and students at home. And of course, we can't walk into classrooms if we're the only one there. That's not going to make a lot of sense. The third reason that I think we're going to see some difficulty with classroom walkthroughs this year is that what we see a given teacher doing is not necessarily going to be that own teacher's work in the way it was in previous years. I'm seeing a lot more dividing and conquering of the work between different members of a team. We're probably also going to see a lot more reliance on materials and resources that were created by people outside of the school. You know, published curriculum that's been adapted for an online format. People are going to use whatever they can get their hands on. So walking into a classroom and expecting to see that teacher's lesson being taught by the teacher may not be the best assumption. You know, we need to talk about that division of labor and figure out, okay, is this a lesson that this teacher planned? I think it's great to divide and conquer. I think it's fabulous that teachers are using resources that are available and not reinventing the wheel. I think we just have to be clear on what it is that we're seeing. And if we have a question about what we're seeing, like if part of a math lesson doesn't make sense to us and the teacher that we're observing isn't the one who planned that lesson, that may be a more appropriate conversation for the team, for the PLC, or perhaps for the individual who planned the lesson. You know, we have to be careful about holding people directly accountable for things that they're sharing. And I think there might just be a different opportunity, a different place where we have that conversation. And then fourth, we have different modalities of instruction that may impact the observability of practice. And what I mean by that is that if we're doing flipped learning, or if we are doing project-based learning, or if we are doing some other form of instruction other than kind of traditional live teaching, what we see is going to differ in pretty substantial ways from how it has looked in the years past. So we just need to be mindful of all of those things as we seek to accomplish some of the same purposes that we've accomplished in previous years, and as we seek to modify our plan in order to meet the realities that we're working under, right? So having said that, what can we do? First of all, if you are able to get into classrooms in person, one thing that I want to encourage you to set aside completely is the goal of gathering evidence for now. I mean, if things get, you know, back to normal and you're able to get into classrooms consistently and frequently and it's not a problem and we're able to just kind of do business as usual, wonderful. We will cross that bridge when we come to it. Let's assume for now that getting into classrooms is going to be a rare and extraordinary privilege. We are not there to evaluate the teacher. We are not there to collect data. We are there because we are a representative of the school. We are there symbolically, you know, to celebrate learning, to welcome everyone, to make people feel comfortable. And I don't think we should waste that opportunity on things like evidence collection, data collection, or feedback. I believe we need to prioritize presence, being present with our students and teachers over anything else. We need to be pleasant when we are present. I'm gonna say that one again. I think the most important thing for us to do is to be present and pleasant if and when we are able to get into classrooms. More than anything else, for morale, for climate, for just relationships, it is so critical that we not waste these opportunities to just be with our people. And we don't need to make this about evaluation or walkthroughs or you know, reaching a tally or anything like that. I think these opportunities are going to be fairly rare. So let's make the most of them. And we will find other ways to deal with the evidence that we need to have in order to have evidence-based improvement conversations. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I'll have 6 or 7 different strategies for you other than being there in person. Now, one thing that might come to mind as an alternative if you can't get there in person is to kind of pop in to online classes. So if your school is using live online classes, that could be an opportunity to pop in. You could smile and wave and say, "Hey, everybody, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to say hi, see what you were talking about." And you can certainly do that in a Zoom call or a Microsoft Teams call or a Canvas or what, you know, whatever your system is, you can probably find a way to pop in electronically into a video-based class. And I don't want to discourage you at all from doing that. Set expectations with your teachers. Tell them, you know, this is what I'm thinking of doing. Does that work for you? How might I do that technically? You know, get some of that figured out so that you're not surprising anyone. And, you know, showing up to classes that there's nobody in, you know, you want to plan this out a little bit and set those expectations. But when you do that, when you show up virtually in a virtual classroom, continue to make it your priority to be present and pleasant. This should not be an evaluation. This should not be an opportunity to collect data or take a whole lot of notes. Just show up and be nice, and everybody will be happy about that. And we'll save the evidence collection for the other strategies that we'll talk about now. So strategy number one, if you need to collect evidence, you can't be there in person, or you have very limited opportunities to be there in person or to pop into live video classes, the best thing that you can do, and we talked about this in one of our recent shows, episode 68, is to set aside a time to talk with each teacher. I think it's very critical, more than it ever has been in the past, for us to set aside time for one-on-one conversations with teachers. And those are probably, I'm guessing, going to happen over video conference. You can Skype or Zoom or FaceTime or whatever it is that you do. But do it intentionally. Set up a time with every teacher. Keep a list and keep track. Make sure every teacher signs up for a time so that you can talk about whatever it is that you need to talk about. Now, this is going to take a lot of time, but we're not going to have those serendipitous conversations that we normally have in the hallway, in the classroom, outside of the classroom, in the break room. A lot of that is kind of the glue that holds us together as a staff. And without that informal interaction, we've really got to find a way to make up for that. And the best recommendation I have for you is to schedule structured cycles of one-on-one conversations with staff. So Instructional Leadership Association members, you will find that in your dashboard as episode 68 of this show. If you're not a member, let me know and we can talk about how to get you into the Instructional Leadership Association membership. A lot of considerations about planning those cycles. You know, you want to make sure that you choose the right topic are covered in chapter 20 of the book. So if you have, if it's been a while since you've read that book, or if you've not seen that yet, check out chapter 20 for choosing a focus. That's specifically about a cycle of observations, but many of the same concerns will apply to just one-on-one conversations. All right, option number two, other ways to gather evidence without being there in person, without lurking on a live video conference. My best recommendation for gathering rich evidence of classroom practice and seeing what teachers are actually doing in terms of their practice is to simply say, we are going to implement video-based coaching. And you can do this with SibMe. You could do it without a system, really. You could have people send you videos, but it gets very cumbersome. So I recommend that you do this in SibMe and simply have teachers upload a video. Have them share that video with you in a coaching huddle. And then you can watch that video. You can leave timestamped comments. You can leave audio comments, as I have here in the screenshot. And then the teacher can access that feedback on their schedule, and they can click on the comment and see what the video was, you know, what was happening in the video at that time that you commented on. And you can link all of that to your instructional framework, to your teacher evaluation rubric. Really an incredibly rich way to do coaching or instructional leadership feedback to have the teacher submit a video. And a couple things happen when it's the teacher who's choosing what video to submit. Number one, you get a huge sense of psychological safety, right? Because if the teacher's not comfortable with the video, they can delete it, they can try again, they can upload a different one and share something that they really do want feedback on, not something that they feel doesn't represent the true quality of their practice or that caught them at an awkward moment. So it gives the teacher a lot of control. Number two, it also gives you a lot of specificity. You know, like you can really sit down and focus on that video. You're not distracted by everything else that's going on in the classroom and putting on Germex and all those things. You can really focus on what's happening teaching and learning wise and get really substantive in your comments. And then of course you can talk about those comments. Very rich form of evidence. You may want to do all of your formal observations and evaluations that way this year. That would probably be my top recommendation, is that you get set up now with a video platform that's going to help you manage this. SibMe.com is my recommendation, SibMe.com. Let's talk about an additional way to gather evidence of classroom practice. So moving on to number three, it makes total sense to me to take advantage of the conversations about practice that are already taking place in professional learning communities or departmental meetings or grade level team meetings. Whatever collaborative structures you already have, you can either ask teachers to record those meetings and provide you with the recordings, again, through a platform like SibMe, or if you have a designated staff drive where you save videos like that. And then you can watch those videos if you have the opportunity, or you can even join those conferences live and sit in on those PLC conversations. I have to say, one of the most important things I ever did as an instructional leader when I was an elementary principal in Seattle was to sit in on teachers' PLC meetings. And I did not run the meeting. I tried not to interrupt the meeting. I would you know, do what I was asked to do if somebody needed some support or needed to have a question answered. But mostly I was a fly on the wall in those conversations, and that was incredibly valuable. So rather than say, well, this is about your, you know, about my instructional leadership, so I need to take up your time separately from all of the other stuff that you're doing and have you talk just with me, it might make more sense to sit down with the team when they're already talking about their practice. And then you get, you know, you get everybody, you get them talking about practice more. You might have the opportunity to push them more in the direction of using that firsthand evidence, maybe providing video to each other to talk about. But again, I think we've got to be creative here and not add extra meetings or reinvent the wheel if we don't need to. You know, again, there are other things that we'll need to talk about in one-on-one conversations, but some of those practice conversations may be best as team conversations. So join those PLCs or watch the videos later. Lots of options there. Number four, how else can we gather evidence of teacher practice without being in classrooms in person? If you're just tuning in, we are talking today about how to get into classrooms when you can't physically get into classrooms. And one thing that we have to recognize when it comes to remote teaching, you know, virtual or hybrid learning, is that a lot of the classroom actually exists in the cloud. It is no longer just a physical space. It is also an online space. And overwhelmingly, teachers' artifacts, that, you know, what they're producing as they teach, are going to be pretty much automatically included in that online learning space. So if you're using Google Classroom or Canvas by Instructure, you know, whatever it is that you're using, probably a lot of the evidence that you are looking for is already there in the form of artifacts. You've got lessons, you've got resources, you've got assignments, you've got quizzes, you've got discussion questions. All the different learning activities that teachers have put into that learning management system are already there. And I'm a huge fan of not giving teachers extra work to do. So you could find a way to get added to a class or have you know, have the teacher send you an invitation to the class, depending on the system. Get into that class in whatever makes the most sense and see what articles are already there. And you will be overwhelmed with the richness of the evidence that's available to you in that way. But it's not just the teacher-created evidence. It can also be the student-created evidence, the student work that they are doing in that same learning management system. So, I think we're never really closing the loop on teaching and learning if we don't look at the work that students have done. And when students are not just turning in papers that get graded and handed back and you might never see them, now that students are actually doing a lot of their work online, you have an unprecedented ability to go and look at that work. You could even comment on that work if it's appropriate, and you can see firsthand, you know, what is this teacher teaching toward? What are they asking the students to do? What are students doing? And what feedback do they need to improve and, you know, to continue to get better at that work? We are going to have an unprecedented window into that world this year when students are submitting their work online. So if we can't get into classrooms, we can't look over their shoulder as they're doing their work on paper in the classroom, perhaps, but we do get to see that work as it's submitted through a learning management system. Number six, how else can we gather evidence of teacher practice if we can't get into classrooms? Well, we can rely on good old-fashioned data. And, you know, generally, I am not the biggest data person. I'm not a big fan of numbers on a spreadsheet. Compared with the richness of getting into a classroom, seeing teaching and learning take place, I would much rather be there in person and watch the lesson and talk about the lesson than look at a spreadsheet that only contains very narrow measures. But I'm going to guess you still are going to have those very narrow measures. You're going to have some sort of reading scores. You're going to have some sort of math scores. You might have curriculum-based assessments in every subject area. Whatever you are continuing to do for assessment, you know, don't overlook that source of evidence, you know, in the form of numerical data. So continue to collect those assessments that inform teaching and learning. Have those conversations with teachers. You know, it may even be overdue that you establish a way that you talk with teachers about their data. Maybe that's something that hasn't been part of your practice and you're wondering, you know, should I include that in my one-on-one conversation cycles with teachers? I think there's a big opportunity there. And finally, number seven, that brings us to the last major option that I want to present to you today, is do a complete video observation cycle. As we talked about earlier, you can do that in SIBME, but you know, the whole shebang of pre-conference, observation and post-conference. And there are a couple of different ways that you can do that live observation. You can live stream it with a platform like SibMe. You can have the teacher record on their phone and upload a video. You could observe a live class on Zoom. You know, there are lots of different ways that you can get access to the same instruction that that students are experiencing. And then do the post-conference. And the reason I'm separating this or distinguishing this from the earlier, from option number two on video, is that I believe that pre and post-conference really make a huge difference when it comes to any kind of improvement conversation. We want to make sure that we're on the same page about what the goal is for the lesson, what the teacher's focus is for their own professional growth, and we can really only do that well if we have a pre-conference and post-conference. I'm also going to guess that you have some sort of teacher evaluation requirements that have not been completely waived. Maybe you're given more flexibility this year, but I would suggest that this is such a helpful process and such a good process to get right that I wouldn't even ask for a waiver to the evaluation process. I would just say, hey, you know what? We're going to do that on video this year. Otherwise, we're going to do it in pretty much the same way. If you have other changes, great. But let's not throw that out the window without a good replacement. I think this process can work perfectly well and in some cases even better when we do it over video. And what I've been recommending for a number of years now is that you both record and observe in person, and then you have that firsthand experience, but you also have shared evidence about what happened in the lesson, because it's so difficult for the teacher who's busy teaching all day to really take your perspective as an observer or take the student's perspective and really get a sense of what you saw. So often in those post conferences, we're saying, okay, here's what I saw. The teacher's like, were you even in the same room at the same time? So having a video record that you can both look at and say, okay, here's what was happening. This kid was out of my field of vision, but here's what he was doing. Or, you know, looking over this student's shoulder at their work. You know, there's so much rich evidence that we can bring to the conversation if it is on video. So if you're forced to do your observations on video, I am not convinced that is a bad thing. I think the richness factor can really be amplified by video. But of course, keep up that pre-conference and post-conference so that the purpose is established, we're on the same page, and we can avoid any misunderstandings. So I hope those seven strategies are helpful to you in thinking about, you know, when we can't get into classrooms, what can we do? To review real quickly, number one, we can do one-on-one conversations, not necessarily a feedback conversation, but just a check-in and a time to chat with the teacher, perhaps about a specific topic that you've chosen. Please see episode 68 of the Instructional Leadership Show, Structured Cycles of One-on-One Conversations with Staff. Number two, we talked about teacher-submitted videos, and I recommended that you use SibMe.com or a similar platform to manage that process. Number three, I recommended that you join teachers' PLC meetings virtually, or at least get access to the videos so that you can see what conversations people are having, maybe participate in those conversations about practice. Number four, look at existing artifacts that teachers are already uploading to their learning management system. Number five, look at student work that is uploaded to that learning management system. Number six, look at the data that you are already collecting and continuing to collect. And then number seven, using the formal observation cycle with video as a very rich source of evidence. Now, with all of these, we have to be mindful that the source of evidence needs to be aligned with the nature of the evidence we're collecting. And a couple of caveats that we made about that toward the beginning. You know, if the lesson that I'm seeing was actually planned by a different teacher, I just will need to anticipate that some of the discussion might need to involve that teacher if we're really going to get to better decision making. So just make sure that you are not trying to squeeze evidence out of a form of evidence that does not contain it. We want to have these rich conversations. We want to set ourselves up to have the richest possible information to improve teaching and learning as we go throughout this year. One more thing that you may want to do for your observation cycles or your conversation cycles with teachers is, again, look at chapter 20, Choosing an Instructional Focus for an Observation Cycle, in the book, Now We're Talking, 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership. If you're interested in learning more about SibMe, we are doing a whole series on kind of shifting a lot of what we normally do in person, face-to-face, into an online platform, and we are doing that project in an online platform. It's hosted by SIBME, and they're providing the software that we use for that. You can sign up for free at principalcenter.com/continuity. I have some fabulous exclusive content in there, so I would highly encourage you to check that out, because we do remove things from Facebook after a period of time. But all of that is in the Continuity Project at principalcenter.com/continuity. We also have some resources for making some of these shifts to a virtual or online format. So I hope that has been helpful food for thought. This has been episode 70 of the Instructional Leadership Show, Getting Into Classrooms When You Can't Get Into Classrooms. I'm Justin Bader, and I will see you next time. Take care.